Never. His answer didn't surprise me. Baldwin sipped his wine. So where do you want to go Thursday night? Thursday? Your birthday dinner. Oh, I forgot. I've been so busy lately, it totally slipped my mind that my birthday is coming up. Well, it didn't slip mine. I was thinking we could go to Ecru. It's a new French place on the Upper East Side. The wait list for a reservation is 3 months long, but a colleague of mine is friends with the owner and said he could make sure we get in. That sounds great. Thank you. If I was being honest, I would have preferred to go to Joey's again for a big, greasy burger. But Baldwin was a foodie and always trying to expand my palatal horizons. On occasion, I even liked some of the fancy foods. Baldwin stayed for a while, and we talked shop. He told me about a paper he hoped to get published, and I told him how nervous I was to meet two of my video clients in the office tomorrow. After I relocated to New York, some of my video and phone clients who were local to the area had become face-to-face clients. It was always odd meeting them that first time, but tomorrow's appointment made me particularly nervous because I suspected the husband could be physically abusing the wife. It started to get late, and at one point I yawned and stretched. My thin T-shirt rode up and exposed some of my stomach. Baldwin's eyes zeroed in on the flesh, and I watched as he swallowed. Moments like these confused me the most. I wouldn't claim to be an expert on men, but I'd dated a decent amount myself, even had a few longish relationships. Generally, I could read a man's attraction to me pretty well, and in this moment I would have sworn Baldwin was into me. It wasn't new. I'd felt it on plenty of other occasions, which might be the reason I was still hanging on after so many years. Sometimes a spark turns into a fire. Baldwin cleared his throat and stood.
I should get going. It's late.
Are you sure? Maybe I'll pour a glass of wine for myself if you want to have a second.
I have an early lecture tomorrow.
Okay. I hid my disappointment and walked him to the door. Baldwin said goodnight and then stopped and turned back. For a brief second, my imagination got the best of me, and I imagined him turning around and shutting the door, deciding to stay. Instead, he said,
I'm expecting a package tomorrow. If you see it in the hall, can you grab it for me? I won't be home until late.
Sure. Is tomorrow night the New York Psychology Symposium you were telling me about?
No, that's next week. Rachel has tickets to see an off-Broadway play tomorrow.
Oh, Rachel.
You met her last week briefly at the coffee shop.
Yes, Rachel. Like I could forget. She'd been wearing the dress shirt he'd worn the night before when I heard his door open and peeked through the peephole. I'll grab anything outside your door. Have fun tomorrow night. After he left, I washed off my makeup and brushed my teeth. Of course, even though I'd been yawning not 5 minutes ago, I was wide awake once I could go to sleep. Story of my life. I thought about my conversation with Drew earlier in the day. It seemed like it had occurred a week ago. Captain Prolactinator had suggested I masturbate before bed. But I was in no mood to think about Baldwin after hearing about his date tomorrow with Rachel. Although, I didn't have to visualize Baldwin, did I? A vision of Drew suddenly popped into my head. He was definitely good-looking enough. But I shouldn't. I turned over and forced myself to close my eyes. An hour later, I reached over to my end table. I was desperate for some sleep after the long, draining day. I turned on my vibrator and closed my eyes, attempting to relax to the hum. 10 minutes later, I was sound asleep with a smile on my face.
Chapter 13. Alexa had ruined my job for a long time. After my divorce, I found bits and pieces of my marriage in every client's bitter battle. It reminded me how much time I'd wasted. How from that first night I'd let my dick make decisions when it came to Alexa, instead of my head. Everything in my client's files became personal to me, and it was like reliving the worst nights of my life on a daily basis. Eventually, I learned to separate things. Somewhat. But I'd lost something along the way. My job became a source of money, and not something I enjoyed doing. While I no longer dreaded going downstairs to my office, I also didn't look forward to it anymore. Until today. I was up even earlier than usual. After hitting the gym, I was in my office by 7, reviewing a case file. Henry Archer was one of the few clients I truly liked. His divorce was even amicable, because he was a genuinely nice guy. I had his settlement conference today at 11. The entire gang would be here to try to hammer out a final deal. Miraculously, I didn't despise his soon-to-be ex-wife, either. I was in the copy room when I heard Emery come in. Her heels clanked as she came down the hall carrying a large brown box. I stopped what I was doing and walked to take it from her hands.
"Thank you. Do you know no one offered me a seat on the subway carrying that thing?"
"Most people are assholes. What the hell do you have in here? It's heavy as shit." I set the box down on her desk and opened it without asking. Inside was a glass paperweight, but it might as well have been made of lead. "This thing is 10 pounds. Are you worried a hurricane is going to gust through the office and blow around all your papers?" She swiped it from my hand.
"It's an award. I earned it for a paper I wrote that was published in Psychology Today."
"It's a weapon. Glad you didn't have that thing when I found you in my office that first night."
"Yes, I could have put a dent in that pretty head of yours."
I smirked. "I knew it. You think I'm pretty?" I attempted to see what else was inside her box, but she swatted my hand away.
"Nosy."
"You unpacked my boxes."
"That's true. I guess you can look."
"Well, now I don't want to, since you told me I could."
"You're like a child, you know that?"
I'd left my cell phone at the copy machine and heard it ringing from down the hall. I went to answer it, but the caller had hung up. After finishing making my copies, I gathered the stack of papers and stopped by Emery's office again. Standing in the doorway, I teased, "You're early today. Did you take my advice on falling asleep?"
"No."
Emery's rapid answer was too rapid. Years of running depositions had made me skilled at picking up on small clues. Sometimes something ever so slight took me down a path I hadn't expected and led to something interesting. I'd picked up a scent from her two-letter word and was about to follow the trail. "So you didn't have trouble falling asleep last night, huh?" When she started to blush and attempted to busy herself at unpacking her box, I knew I was on to something. Curious, I walked into her office and around to the other side of her desk so I could see her face, even though she was looking down and unpacking. I ducked my head and looked up to catch her eyes. "You masturbated last night, didn't you?" Her blush reddened.
"Did you?"
she countered. "Deflecting. We all know what that means." I grinned. "I did, and this morning, too. Want to know what I was thinking about while I did it?"
"No."
"You're not even the slightest bit curious?" Even though she was red-faced, I loved that she pushed through it and faced me.
"Don't you have any marriages to desecrate, pervert?"
"Come on, admit it. You masturbated last night, and that's why you had such a good night's sleep and got to work on time for the change."
"Why do you care?"
"I like to be right."
"You're really a giant egomaniac."
"So I've been told."
"Will you drop the subject if I tell you the truth?"
I nodded. "I will." She looked me directly in the eye.
"I did."
"What?"
"What do you mean, what? You know what I mean."
"Of course I do." "I'm not sure I do. Why don't you explain what you're referring to?"
"Get out."
"Say you masturbated and I'll get out."
"Why? So you can get off on the thought of me masturbating?"
"I thought you didn't want to hear what I was thinking about this morning when I took care of myself." I chuckled. Emery was trying to be tough, but her voice told me she was more embarrassed and amused than pissed off. Feeling unusually kind, I decided to let her off the hook before I pushed my luck. "I have a conference at 10 today that will probably turn into lunch with my client afterward. There are menus in the top right drawer of the reception desk if you want to order in."
"Thank you."
"You're welcome." I stopped just outside of her doorway. "One other thing."
"Hmm."
"Were you thinking of me when you masturbated?" "I'd said it just to be an ass. but her sudden deer-in-the-headlights face told me I'd actually hit the nail on the head. Well, shit. Coming to work just got even better. A part of me, a very large part of me, of course, wanted to stay and push that interesting tidbit of information even more. But I'd suddenly turned into a 12-year-old boy and could feel my cock swelling. Thanks to her dirty thoughts, little Miss Oklahoma with the great ass got a reprieve after all.
That's not the fucking problem. The problem is your inability to cook a decent meal without burning it.
Hearing that type of statement yelled wasn't new to these walls. Only this time it wasn't coming from one of my clients. I'd just returned to the office after a late lunch with Henry Archer, and the sound of an angry man echoed through the hall. Emery's office door was slightly open, and I debated checking in with her, making sure everything was okay. Listening, I heard her ask the guy to settle down, and then another woman began to speak. So I went back to my office to mind my own business. 15 minutes later, there it was again. I was on the phone when that same guy's voice carried down the hall and straight into my office.
I was on the fence about marrying you in the first place. Should have called it off after you couldn't even carry our kid.
The hair on the back of my neck rose. What he'd said was horrible. But I'd heard spouses spit vile things back and forth at each other during a divorce. Not much shocked me anymore. Yet this guy, it wasn't what he said, but how he said it. His voice was laced with anger and intimidation, threatening while insulting. I hadn't even seen his face, but my gut told me he was more than just a verbal abuser. Unfortunately, I'd seen physical abusers over the years, too. There was just something about the way the scumbags yelled that set them apart from your run-of-the-mill I-hate-you-and-want-to-injure-your-soul spouse. I rushed the client I'd been speaking to off the phone and went to check on Emery. Before I could reach her office, a loud crashing sound sent me running. When I got to the door, the guy was sitting in his seat while his wife knelt on her hands and knees to clean something up. Emery was standing.
What's going on in here? Everything okay?
Emery hesitated and caught my eye when she spoke. She was trying to defuse the situation. I saw it in her eyes, heard it in her voice.
Mr. Dawson was a little excited and knocked over a glass of wort I had sitting on my desk.
The heavy paperweight she'd lugged on the subway in her box was shattered all over the floor.
Take a walk and cool off, buddy.
The asshole's head whipped around.
Are you talking to me?
I am.
Who the hell are you?
I'm the guy telling you to take a walk and cool off. He stood.
And what if I don't?
You'll be physically removed.
You're going to call the cops on me for breaking a piece of glass?
Not unless Emery wants me to, but I will toss your ass out on the street myself. I folded my arms across my chest and kept eye contact. Men who abused women were pussies. I'd kick his ass and enjoy every fucking minute of it. After a few seconds, the guy looked at his wife.
I'm done with this counseling shit.
Then he stormed out. I stepped aside to make room for him to pass. Both Emery and her client stayed quiet until we heard the front door slam closed. You good? I asked. Emery nodded, and for the first time, the woman turned and faced me. Her cheek was purple and yellow with a fading bruise. My jaw clenched. I should have punched the fucker while I had the chance.
He's not usually like that. It's just been tough at his job lately.
Sure he isn't. Emery and I locked eyes one more time, an unspoken exchange. We were on the same page. I'll let you two talk. I shut the door behind me. For the next half hour, I worked on a case file at the empty reception desk in the lobby, not wanting that asshole husband to walk back in without my knowing. Eventually, I caught his face outside the front window. He was smoking a cigarette and waiting outside for his wife. Smart move. Emery walked Mrs. Dawson to the lobby as they spoke.
How about we talk on the phone tomorrow, even if it's just for 15 minutes? I'd really like to hear from you after today's session.
Her client nodded.
Okay.
How does 10 sound?
That's good. Bill leaves for work at 8.
Emery nodded.
You know what?
I didn't give you an appointment card for next week's session. Let me grab one for you and I'll be right back.
After she walked away, I spoke to Mrs. Dawson. My voice was low, non-judgmental, and cautious. You gonna be okay? She briefly looked in my eyes, but quickly diverted hers to the ground.
I'll be fine. Bill isn't really a bad guy. Honestly, you just saw him at a bad time?
Uh-huh. Emery returned and handed her client a small card.
Talk to you tomorrow?
She nodded and left. When the door shut, Emery sighed loudly.
I'm so sorry about that.
Nothing to be sorry about. You can't help that your client is an asshole. Got plenty of them myself.
I think he's physically abusive to her.
I'd tend to agree with you.
I also don't think I'll ever hear from her again. She's going to cut me off because I confronted her about what I suspected was going on.
You don't think she'll call tomorrow or show up at her appointment next week?
Nope. He's not going to let her continue. Now that I know him a little better, I'm really surprised he ever agreed to come here at all. My counseling sessions have been with just her.
It's tough. She sighed again.
I hope she calls you.
Me?
The appointment card reminder I gave her was your business card. Figured she needed a divorce attorney more than relationship counseling.
My eyebrows jumped. Nice. We walked side by side down the hall.
I could use a drink, Emery said.
Your office or mine? Emery looked at me.
You have alcohol in the office?
I have a lot of shitty days. She smiled.
My office.
This tastes like turpentine.
Emery's entire face twisted. I sipped. It's 25-year-old Glenmorangie. That's $600 a bottle paint thinner you're drinking there.
For that price, they could have added some flavor.
I chuckled. I sat in a guest chair and Emery was behind her desk. She must have unpacked the rest of her box because there were some new personal items on display. I lifted the glass coaster-like base that had gone with the award douchebag Dawson broke. You're gonna need a new weapon.
Don't think I need one with you around to threaten my clients.
He deserved it. I should have punched him in the face like he likes to do to his wife.
You should have. That guy was a real asshole. A fucking asshole.
She was cute, working her New York accent, although it still sounded like Oklahoma doing New York. There were two new frames on her desk, and I reached for one of them. It was a photo of an older couple.
Help yourself,
she said with sarcasm and a smile. I looked at her face, then the couple, then back at her. These are parents?
Yep.
Who do you look like?
My mother, I'm told.
I studied her mother's face. They looked nothing alike. I don't see it. She reached over and slipped the photo from my hands.
I'm adopted. I look like my biological mother.
Oh. Sorry.
It's fine. It's not something I'm secretive about.
I leaned back in my chair, watching her look at the photo. There was reverence on her face when she spoke again.
I may not look like my mom, but we're a lot alike.
Oh yeah? So she's a pain in the ass too? She pretended to be offended.
I'm not a pain in the ass.
I've known you barely a week. Day one, you were stealing office space and tried to kick my ass when I caught you. A few days later, you started a fight because I made an innocent comment about some bad advice you were feeding a client, and today, I almost got into a fistfight because of you.
My advice wasn't bad, she sighed. But I guess the rest is true. I have been a pain in the ass, haven't I?
I finished my drink and poured two fingers more into the tumbler, then topped off Emery's glass. You're in luck. I like pains in the asses. We talked for a while longer. Emery told me about her parents' hardware store back in Oklahoma and was in the middle of some story about selling supplies to a guy who was arrested for locking his wife in an underground bunker for 2 weeks when my office phone rang. I went to grab it, but she reached for it first.
Mr. Jagger's office, how may I assist you?
She answered in a sexy, flirty voice. The two drinks had loosened her up, made her playful. I liked it.
May I ask who's calling?
She picked up a ballpoint pen and paused to listen, mindlessly rubbing the top along her bottom lip. My eyes followed. I bet they taste good. I had the sudden urge to lean over the desk and bite one. Shit. Not a good thought. Yet I was still staring at her lips when she looked back up at me. I should have stopped, but the way they moved when she started to speak held me captive.
Okay, Mrs. Logan, let me see if he's available.
That broke my gaze. I waved both hands in front of me, motioning to her that I wasn't available. She put the phone on hold for 5 seconds and then returned to the call.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Logan, he seems to have stepped out.
A pause.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not at liberty to give out Mr. Jagger's cell phone number, but I will tell him you called.
After she hung up, she said,
You know what I just realized?
That your voice sounds sexier after a few drinks? She blinked.
My voice sounds sexier?
I gulped a mouthful of my second drink. Yeah, you were flirting answering the phone.
I wasn't flirting.
I shrugged. Whatever, I liked it. What were you going to say you realized?
I don't even remember now. I think those two little drinks went right to my head.
And your lips, I grumbled.
What?
Nothing.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say.
She pointed a finger at me.
I've taken at least 20 phone calls in 3 days and saw a ton of appointments on your calendar. That was the first Mrs. that called. You don't have any clients named Jane, Jessica, or Julie.
That's because I only take male clients.
What?
She looked at me like I just told her the sky was purple. Male clients? You know, they're like women, except with less drama and bigger dick. I quieted mid-word, hearing the front door open. Are you expecting someone?
No. Why?
I just heard the front door open. I stood and walked to the hallway. Hello? A guy I'd never seen before popped his head around the corner from the lobby. Hi, I'm looking for Emery Rose? I squinted. Who are you? I was concerned that the Dawson douchebag had come back to start trouble, but this guy looked like the last trouble he saw was when the kids picked on him in elementary school. I turned back to Emery, who was already heading toward me. She joined me in the doorway.
Baldwin, I thought that was your voice. What are you doing here?
Thought I would surprise you. The guy raised flowers I hadn't noticed at his side. Their color matched his crooked bow tie. They were lame. Looked like he bought them at the Chinese market down the block for $7.99.
That's so sweet.
Emery stepped out of the doorway, where we were nice and close, and walked to the guy, giving him a hug and kiss. For some reason, I stayed put, watching it all. After she took the flowers, she remembered I was behind her.
Baldwin, this is Drew. Drew, Baldwin is the friend I told you about the other day.
I was confused, and she read it on my face.
My TA in college. Remember I told you all about him?
Really? That guy? Oh, yeah. I extended my hand. Nice to meet you. Drew Jagger. Likewise. Baldwin Markham. There was an odd, awkward silence before Emery broke it.
Isn't the office beautiful?
Very nice.
Are you on your way to meet Rachel?
The show isn't for another hour and a half, so I thought I'd check in on you. Baldwin was still looking around the office when he spotted the bottle of Glenmorangie and two empty glasses on Emery's desk. He looked at her. Is that scotch? At 5 in the afternoon? Emery either didn't catch the disdain in his voice or was good at ignoring it.
We had a rough day, she said.
I see. Care for a glass? I asked, certain he would decline after the 60-second assessment I'd made. It's 25 and smooth. No, thank you. I'd seen enough. I have work to catch up on. Nice to meet you, Baldwin. He nodded. An hour later, I was packing up my office when I heard the two of them laughing. The earlier events of the day still had testosterone pumping through my veins, which was probably why, out of nowhere, I had the urge to punch the guy. An outlet was needed. Angry fucking. I need to get laid. I knocked lightly on Emery's door before pushing it open. I'm going to head out. You should try that sleeping technique I told you about again tonight so you're on time again tomorrow. Emery's eyes widened as she attempted to hide her smirk.
Yes, maybe I'll do just that.
Baldwin watched our exchange closely. I waved and nodded. You have a good night. I made it one step before Emery called to me.
Drew?
I turned back.
Yeah?
She wrung her hands together.
Thank you for today. I didn't say it, but I appreciate everything you did.
Anytime, Oklahoma. I rapped my knuckles against her office doorframe. Don't stay too late, okay?
I won't. I'm going to head out in a few minutes. Baldwin has plans tonight, so I'll walk out with him.
Want me to wait? We can grab a burger at Joey's again.
Emery started to respond when Mr. Bowtie interrupted.
Actually, I've had a last-minute change of plans. Why don't I take you for some dinner?
You're not going to the show with Rachel?
We can see it another time. I wasn't aware you'd had a bad day. You can tell me all about it at dinner.
Emery looked at me, conflicted. I made the choice easier for her. Who was I to interrupt the happy couple?
You two have a good night, then.
I might have been full of myself. After all, I'd been told on more than one occasion lately that my ego was pretty big. But I could have sworn Emery's little friend's change of plans had something to do with me. Chapter 14. New Year's Eve, 5 years ago. Happy anniversary! Alexa sat on the couch flipping through a People magazine. I bent to kiss her cheek, then leaned down farther to touch my lips to my almost 2-year-old son's forehead, where he slept with his head on her lap. He was drooling. A big pool of spit puddled on my wife's thigh. I pointed to it and joked. A few years ago, making you wet on New Year's Eve meant something very different. She sighed.
I wish we could go out. This is the first New Year's I've been home since I was a kid.
New Year's Eve was a huge holiday to my wife. She looked forward to it like a kid waiting for Santa. And yesterday, someone had told Alexa there was no Santa. We'd planned on going out tonight, a party in downtown Atlanta thrown by a friend of hers I didn't really care for, but the sitter canceled on us. Alexa was devastated. I was secretly glad. Today was the first day off I'd had in a month, and staying home and watching movies, maybe ringing in the new year inside of my wife, was as much excitement as I was in the mood for. But Alexa had been sulking for 24 hours. She was still having a hard time adjusting to the new lifestyle motherhood had brought. It was understandable. After all, she was only 22, and all of her friends were partying like carefree 22-year-olds. I had hoped she'd make some new friends at the Mommy and Me class she joined last month. Perhaps friends who were married, had a child, and didn't think drinking responsibly meant not spilling your shot of Goldschlager. Why don't you go out? I'll stay home with Beck tonight. Her eyes lit up.
Really?
Not exactly how I thought we'd spend our anniversary, but Alexa needed it.
Sure. I'm wiped out. Me and my little buddy will hang. We don't get to spend enough time alone anyway.
Alexa gently lifted Beck's head from her lap, rested it on a throw pillow, and sprung up to give me a big hug.
I can't wait to wear the dress I bought. Lauren and Allison are going to be so jealous I can afford to shop at Neiman Marcus now.
I forced a smile. I can't wait to help you out of it when you get home. We'd dropped Alexa off at her friend Lauren's last night, and I offered to pick her up, but she insisted she'd take a cab home so I didn't have to wake the baby. Turned out that wasn't a problem. The baby was wide awake, considering it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and my wife still hadn't come home. Beck sat in his high chair, sucking on Cheerios, and made a loud quacking noise to get my attention while I was pouring my second cup of coffee. Filling my cheeks with air, I forced it out and quacked back at him as I sat. He looked momentarily startled at the sound, and for a second I thought he was going to cry. But then he let out a loud giggle, which made me laugh right back.
You like that, buddy, huh?
I leaned closer to him and filled my cheeks again.
Quack, quack.
My son studied my face as if I were an alien, then broke out in a giggle fit. After the third or fourth time, he caught on, and I watched as he tried to make the same sound. His little cheeks would fill, but only a rush of air with some spit would come out of his mouth. No quack. It didn't discourage him. After every one of his attempts, I'd make the sound, and he'd watch intently and try again. At one point, it was his turn, and I thought it might finally be his shining moment. He sucked in a big mouthful of air and then held his breath. His chubby cheeks started to turn red, and his face was so intent. That's my boy. If at first you don't succeed, work harder. I had a proud dad moment there. My boy was going to be a hard worker. He did the red face holding his breath thing a few times and then started giggling again. It was my turn, so I leaned in close to quack, and when I sucked in the air, I realized during that last round he hadn't been working on his quack. He was shitting in his diaper. We both laughed for 10 minutes as I changed him, although I think he was laughing at me and not with me. Shortly after, the little shit machine conked out. I stared at him in wonderment for a while. This wasn't exactly how I'd seen my life as I looked forward 3 years ago, but I wouldn't change it for the world. My son was everything to me. By the time 10 o'clock rolled around, being annoyed because Alexa hadn't come home yet started to morph into worry. What if something had happened to her? I swiped my phone from the kitchen counter and checked my texts. Still nothing. So I dialed her phone. It went right to voicemail. The living room window in our third-floor condo faced Broad Street, a quiet, tree-lined block on the outskirts of Atlanta. Most of the world had been out partying last night, so the street was particularly quiet this morning, which was why I couldn't miss the bright yellow, souped-up Dodge Charger with the number 9 painted on the side coming around the corner. Even though the windows were closed, I could hear the roar of no muffler and the screech as the driver took the turn too fast. What an asshole. That corner was a big blind spot. Alexa could have been crossing the street with the stroller, and that idiot wouldn't have seen them until it was too late. I shook my head and watched the car from the window as it rolled to a stop a few buildings over. It sat idling loudly for a few minutes. Then I watched as the passenger side door opened, and a killer pair of legs peeked out. I was married, not dead. Looking was okay. Then the woman exited the car, and I realized looking was definitely okay, because the woman getting out of a street race car a few buildings away from where we lived was my wife.
Chapter 15. I arrived at the office before Drew. When he walked in at almost 10, I greeted him with sarcasm. Wake up late? Perhaps I can recommend something that might help you sleep. I'd expected a comeback worthy of blushing, but I wasn't even sure he'd heard me. Morning. He disappeared into his office and immediately got on the phone and into what sounded like a heated argument. After I heard him hang up, I gave him a few minutes to settle and then took the morning's messages to his office. Drew was standing behind his desk looking out the window and sipping a tall coffee. He looked a million miles away. I was just about to ask if everything was okay when he turned, and I got my answer. He hadn't shaved. His normally crisp shirt looked like he'd slept in it, and he had dark circles under his usually bright eyes. You look terrible. He forced a half-smile. Thanks. Is everything okay? He rubbed the back of his neck for a minute, and then nodded. Just some personal shit. I'll be fine. Do you want to talk about it? I'm a good listener. Talking is the last thing I need. Spent 2 hours on the phone last night. I'm done talking. All right. Well, what else can I do? What do you need? Even though he looked like he'd been through hell, a glimpse of Drew shone through. He arched a brow in response. Somehow I doubt you need me for that. He grinned. Definitely would have helped me fall asleep last night. We talked for a few minutes, and then I pointed to my office. I have a video conference in a few minutes, so I won't be able to answer the phones for an hour. After that, I'm good until a late afternoon conference here in the office. No problem. I got the phones. Thanks. I went to turn away, Ben remembered what I'd wanted to ask him this morning before he arrived. Would you mind if I hang a small whiteboard on my office door? I have those glue-sticky things to put it up with so it won't ruin the door.
Help yourself.
After putting yet another call through to Drew, I managed to hang the whiteboard level on my door before my video call. My plan was to write a thought-provoking statement on it each day, as I'd always done on my website when my counseling was strictly video conferences and telephone calls. Now that people visited, I wanted to continue the practice. Since my appointment hadn't rung on my computer yet, I grabbed my reading glasses, went to the journal where I kept relationship thoughts and quotes, and thumbed through until I found one I liked. I printed it neatly on the whiteboard. Blowing out someone else's candle doesn't make yours shine brighter. Today, I will make my spouse shine by blank. I stepped back and smiled, rereading my quote. God, I love helping people.
Rifle through her mail. I don't give a shit how you find out. I need to know if she's shacking up with the guy before tomorrow at 2.
I hadn't seen Drew since this morning, although I heard him loud and clear as I rinsed out my coffee mug in the small kitchen next to his office.
Roman, I'll give you $5,000 if you get an intimate photo of them together. Drop off a picnic basket at the front door if you have to. Just get them out in public looking cozy.
Drew's voice boomed through the hall, followed by a hearty laugh. And then,
yeah, right. Blow me, big guy. Later.
While I was drying my coffee mug, Drew came into the kitchen. I couldn't help but overhear part of your conversation.
Oh, yeah? Which part?
I smiled. Most of it. I take it you and your private investigator are close? Drew grabbed a water bottle from the refrigerator and twisted the cap off.
Roman's been my best friend since I stole his girlfriend in 6th grade.
You stole his girlfriend and that made you friends?
Yep. He'd given her the chicken pox, which she then passed to me. Roman and I both got bad cases and were out of school for 2 weeks. We wound up playing video games at his place for 10 days straight.
What happened to your girlfriend? She didn't come between you?
Roman and I made a pact. We'd never go for the same girl again. I dumped her the day we got back, and Roman and I have been buddies ever since.
Oddly, that's kind of sweet. Drew laughed.
That's us. Roman's the guy who goes through a woman's garbage at the curb in the middle of the night to find used condoms, and I'm the guy who slips what he's found to opposing counsel in the middle of a divorce trial. We're both sweet.
I scrunched my nose. Is that a true story? It's disgusting, physically and morally.
How can you say that, without knowing what my client was put through? Revenge can be very sweet.
What part of revenge is sweet? Where you both feel horrible after the revenge is complete instead of just one of you? Drew took a long draw on his water and leaned one hip against the counter.
I forgot. You're the eternal relationship optimist. Speaking of which, how was your date last night?
Date?
With Mr. Bowtie.
Oh. Dinner was nice, but I wouldn't exactly call it a date.
No action at the end of the night, huh?
Not that it's any of your business, but no. Nothing happened between us physically. We had a nice dinner and talked a lot about work. Baldwin's been trying to get me an adjunct position at NYU where he teaches. I don't think I would ever want to be full academia, but I'd love to teach part-time and see patients part-time. Anyway, after dinner we said goodbye at my door.
What's the deal with that guy? Is he in or is he out?
I don't know. He sends me mixed signals. Like last night. He was supposed to be going out with Rachel, a woman he's been seeing, and then he shows up here unannounced, changes his mind, and takes me out to dinner last minute.
Did you ever talk to him about how you feel?
It's never been the right time. Drew pulled his head back.
The right time? What was wrong with last night?
He's seeing someone.
So?
I don't want to interfere in his relationship.
I didn't say to fuck the guy. Tell him how you feel.
Is that what you would do? Drew snickered.
Actually, normally I fuck my dates and don't discuss my feelings, but that's not your style.
I sighed. I wish that was my style. He wiggled his eyebrows.
I can help with that, if you want to give something new a try.
How generous of you. Oh, I'd be plenty generous, trust me. My heart fluttered a little at the sight of Drew's wicked grin. I shook my head. Is this what my life's come to? I'm a couples counselor, and I'm getting my own relationship advice from a divorce lawyer. You're an idealist. I'm a realist. I straightened my shoulders. And what exactly is your relationship status, if you're such an expert? I have lots of relationships. You mean sexual relationships? Yes. I like sex. In fact, I fucking love sex. It's the other shit I don't like. You mean the relationship part? I mean the part where two people get together and start to rely on each other, share a life, even, and then one of them fucks the other one over. Not every relationship turns out that way. In every relationship, one person ends up screwing the other at some point, unless you keep it to just screwing. Then there are no false expectations. I think your divorce and line of work have tainted your outlook. He shrugged. Tainted works for me. Sarah and Ben Astor were a prime example of the reason I loved couples counseling. I'd started seeing Sarah after their son was born and realized quickly that their relationship problems were much more than the added stress of having a new baby. The couple had only been together for 4 months when Sarah became pregnant, which led to a quickie wedding and having the normal honeymoon marriage period cut short by the arrival of a baby. After such a whirlwind, the couple had finally begun settling into their lives, only to discover that their hopes and dreams were very different. Ben wanted a house full of children, a home in the suburbs with a big backyard, and Sarah to stay at home. His wife, on the other hand, wanted to stay in their tiny apartment on the Upper East Side, go back to work, and hire a nanny. The funny thing is, they both insisted they'd told the other how they saw their future. And I believe they did. The problem lay in their communication. So even though over the last few months they'd found a way to compromise on their living arrangements by looking for a house in Brooklyn with a small yard and short commute to Manhattan, they still needed to work on communication, which led me to this week's exercise. I'd asked both Sarah and Ben to bring a list of 5 things they wanted to accomplish over the next year. Today, we'd spent most of our hour going through Sarah's list. She would read Ben one of her planned accomplishments, and he would have to explain back to her what that plan meant. It was amazing how a couple that had been married for 18 months could still misinterpret things. "I want to take a trip down to South Carolina to see my best friend Beth," Sarah said. I looked to Ben. "Okay. Tell me what Sarah just said."
"Well, she wants to go to South Carolina to visit her single friend Beth."
"Yes. Well, Sarah hadn't mentioned that Beth was single, but it sounds like you heard something important to you. Why is the fact that Beth is single significant?"
"She wants to get away. I get that. And she deserves a break. But she wants to go down and spend time with Beth to recapture what she had before we were together. The single, carefree life. Then she'll come back and resent us."
Sarah then told him the things she missed about not having her best friend near her anymore, and how she would like to spend her time while visiting. It was very clear that what she wanted and what he'd interpreted her trip to mean were very different, but after 15 minutes of talking it out, she'd put his mind at ease. Communication and trust were getting better each week with these two, and at the end of our session, I suggested that we begin every other week sessions rather than weekly. "You know what I just realized?" Sarah said as Ben helped her put on her coat.
"What's that?"
"After our video conference sessions end, there's always a cute little quote on your homepage that I read, something that reminds me to do something nice for Ben. We're not going to have those anymore." I smiled.
"Actually, we are. The quotes are still updated on my website, but I'll also be writing them on my door. It was open when you came in, so you probably didn't notice it. But you should read today's on your way out."
Sarah stopped Ben, and together they read the whiteboard after they opened the door. Sarah looked back at me with an odd expression, while Ben smiled from ear to ear. After they were gone, I grabbed my reading glasses and went to the door, wondering if perhaps I'd spelled something wrong. I hadn't, but apparently Drew thought it would be funny to adjust my quote. While I'd written, Blowing out someone else's candle doesn't make you shine brighter. Today I will make my spouse shine by blank. The board on my door now read, blowing someone else makes his day shine brighter. Today I will make my spouse shine by blowing him. I'm going to kill Drew.
Chapter 16. You are such an asshole.
Steve, let me call you back. I think there's an argument that needs refereeing in the conference room next to me. I hung up the phone just as Emery marched into my office to continue her rant.
That type of stuff might be funny with your all-male clients who hire people to dig in their wives' garbage, but it's not to mine.
What the hell is up your ass? She looked seriously pissed, but she also had those glasses on while she was yelling at me. Something about those damn glasses. And I hadn't noticed it this morning, but that skirt was a bit on the tight side. Red looked good on her. She tilted her head.
What are you doing?
What? What am I doing?
You're checking me out. I just watched you do it. I came in here to yell at you for being an asshole, and you're checking me out.
She threw her hands up in the air. I was admiring your outfit. That's different than checking you out.
Oh, really?
Her hands went to her hips.
How is it different?
How is it different?
Don't repeat the question so you can stall for time to make up an answer. How are admiring my outfit and checking me out different?
There was only one way out of this. I like you in your glasses.
My glasses?
Yeah, your glasses. Are they just for reading? She was quiet while she assessed my level of bullshit. Eventually, she shook her head.
You think you can diffuse what you've done with a compliment, don't you?
I'm hoping. I think you're a little crazy.
I'm crazy?
Her voice rose. I sat back in my chair, amused. She was fun to play with. Took my mind off other things. I didn't think redheads could pull off wearing red. She looked down at her skirt and back to me, momentarily perplexed, but then she squinted.
Stop that.
What?
Trying to soften me by saying nice things.
You don't like compliments?
When they're real, yes, I like them. But when they're bullshit to distract me, no, I don't like them at all.
I don't give out bullshit compliments. She gave me a face that said she wasn't buying it.
So you really like my reading glasses?
Gives you that sexy librarian look. She shook her head.
And my red skirt?
To be honest, I don't give a shit about the color, but it's tight and hugs all the right places. Emery's cheeks started to pink. It made me wonder how her creamy skin would look after I sucked on it a bit.
Don't play with my whiteboard. My clients read it. I'm lucky they're in a good place, or they would be doubting my professionalism after your little stunt.
Yes, ma'am. I lifted two fingers to my forehead in a mock salute.
Thank you.
She turned to walk out. I couldn't resist. Bet the guy gets a blowjob tonight.
That would make one of you, then.
For a change, I was leaving the office at 6 o'clock. Want to join me and Roman for a beer over at Fat Cat's? Emery sat at her desk, looking in a small mirror as she lined her lips in a bright red that matched her skirt. Following her hand as it curved into the bow of her top lip, it dawned on me that against the backdrop of the stark white office walls, she looked like a splat of colorful living art on a canvas. What the fuck, Jagger? Living art?
Thanks, but I have plans tonight.
Hot date?
Baldwin is taking me to a French restaurant.
Tension mixed with a healthy dose of unexpected jealousy rumbled in my stomach. French food, huh? Not much of a fan.
Me either. But Baldwin loves escargot.
Snails, I scoffed, then mumbled. Figures.
What's that?
Nothing. What I really wanted to say was that snails reminded me of slugs, and eating that shit would be cannibalism for Mr. Bowtie. The guy was a slug. But instead I went with, you have a good night.
Chapter 17. What's your favorite position?
Emily climbed onto my lap, straddling me. I like this one. I'd have to send Roman a bottle of Grand Patron Platinum for his brilliant idea tonight. We'd met for drinks at our usual bar, but then he insisted we go next door to Maya to try their empanadas. The guy had an obsession with Mexican food. Emily DeLuca and her friend Allison were already there, enjoying margaritas at the bar. Emily was an attorney at a firm across town where I often referred to estate planning work. We had flirted a few times, and there was a spark, but for me, spark never trumped sparkle on a certain finger on the left hand, and the huge rock she wore was pretty hard to miss. It was also hard to notice it was missing tonight, especially since she'd wiggled the fingers on her left hand at me right before asking if she could buy me a drink. Even with that obvious gesture, I still confirmed her breakup before we left together. No matter how hot or ready a woman was, I didn't touch cheaters. Emily ground down on my growing cock, and I reached around under her bunched-up skirt to grab a handful of ass. Then I pulled on the lacy fabric running up the crack to increase the friction on the front. She moaned, so I pulled harder. Christ, I love G-strings. She reached for my shirt and started to work the buttons while I sucked on her neck. I knew the first time I met you that we'd be good together. I hope you have a full box of condoms, because after I ride you, I want to be on all fours while you take me from behind. The thought of Emily ass up was exactly what I needed, especially since I'd spent the last week fantasizing about another woman's ass, one I should not be thinking about. Although the repeated visual of Emery's creamy, round ass with my pink handprint on it as I hammered into her from behind was a new go-to favorite fantasy of mine. I dreamed of finishing inside of her and then cupping my cum as it dripped out to rub into my handprint on her skin like a salve. My eyes were shut, and I had to press them tighter to ward off the visual of another woman. Because thinking of one woman while another rides you is a complete dick thing to do, even for me. Emily lifted enough to slide her hand between us and cupped my cock, giving it a good squeeze. "I want you now." She began to frantically unbuckle my pants, which had me reaching for my wallet, and then remembering there was no condom in there. Fuck. "Any chance you have a condom?" I asked, biting on her earlobe. Her voice was strained. "No, and I screwed up my birth control this month, so please tell me you have one somewhere in this apartment." Shit. I didn't. I'd finished off the big box in my nightstand last month and never got around to replacing it. Then I'd used the emergency one I kept in the back of my wallet in Hawaii. But I had a few down in my office in the top right-hand drawer. At least I didn't have to go outside and freeze my balls off. I groaned as I pulled back. Cupping Emily's face, I said, "I need 2 minutes. I'm sorry. Condoms are in my office downstairs."
"Want me to come with you? I wouldn't object to a little desk sex. Plus, it will save time."
Smart girl. But probably not a good idea to bring her to a place where we'd be surrounded by shit that reminded me of the woman I was trying to keep out of my head. I gave her a chaste kiss and lifted her off of me. "Stay put. My office is on the first floor. There's 24-hour security down there. I don't want to have to cover your mouth when you scream my name." The damn elevator took forever to make its way up to my floor, so I took the opportunity to at least buckle my pants before running into Ted, the night doorman. What I should have done was put on shoes. The marble-tiled floor was like an ice cube, and I didn't want my body temperature cooling down. Inside my office, I made a point of not looking at Emery's closed door as I walked up the hallway. I didn't need anything else to remind me of her. Definitely not the whiteboard where she wrote sappy relationship crap and then stormed into my office looking all sexy and angry. Nope, not going to look. Like a 2-year-old, I held my hand up to block my peripheral view of the office across from mine as I opened my door. Rummaging through my desk, I found 3 loose condoms in the drawer. Thank fuck. I shoved them in my pocket and started back down the hall toward the lobby. I'd almost cleared the hallway when I heard a sound. I should look. Fuck that. Let someone break in and steal whatever they want. I'd deal with it tomorrow. I had more important things waiting for me upstairs. Then I heard it again. It almost sounded like a sniffle. Was Emery still here?
I tried to keep going, but I knew I'd never be able to focus if I thought she could be hurt or something. What if she fell on her way out and was bleeding all over the floor in her closed office? I jogged back to her door and opened it.
Drew, you scared the shit out of me.
Emery jumped in her seat and clutched her chest. What are you still doing here? I thought you had a hot date with Mr. Escargot.
So did I.
Upon closer inspection, I could see that she'd been crying. She had a tissue wadded up in her hand, and her pale skin was blotchy. What did he do? I had the sudden urge to choke the little dweeb with his own bow tie. She sniffled.
Nothing, really. He just canceled our dinner plans.
What happened?
Today's my birthday, and...
It's your birthday? Why didn't you say anything?
Birthdays have never been a big deal for me. I celebrated Gotcha Day growing up, like most people celebrate birthdays.
Gotcha Day?
The day my parents brought me home from the adoption agency. They always said everyone had a birthday, but the day they got me was the best present they ever received. So they started to celebrate Gotcha Day with me instead of their own birthdays. It just sort of stuck. And birthdays are just a number for me.
That's really incredible. But you still should have told me it was your birthday. It didn't escape me that Emery barely acknowledged her birthday, while my ex-wife thought her birthday was a national holiday. That had always annoyed the shit out of me, even before things got really bad. She shrugged.
Anyway, I'm just being a big baby. Baldwin made reservations at this popular French restaurant where it's impossible to get a table, and I was supposed to meet him at 8.
What happened?
He texted me and said Rachel was pissed that he blew her off to take me to dinner the other night, and when he'd mentioned he was taking me out again, she got annoyed, so he had to cancel tonight.
The guy was a total asshole. He was definitely stringing Emery along. There was no doubt in my mind after everything she told me, and then seeing how he reacted the other night when I'd suggested she and I grab a bite to eat. He was territorial about her in more than a friendly way, yet he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. I know you have feelings for him, but the guy seems like an asshole to me.
I just need to let go and move on.
I think that's a good idea.
I should go out and celebrate my birthday myself. Pick someone up in a bar and bring him home with me.
That's not a good idea.
She sighed. I know. I'm just not a random hookup type of girl. I've tried it, and I hate myself for weeks after. It's not worth it.
Thank God. The thought of her bringing some random guy home to hook up with made me physically sick. Speaking of which, my random hookup was upstairs waiting. What are you going to do tonight? I asked.
I'm just going to finish up this file and then head home. I'm tired anyway.
Okay. Don't stay too long. We'll celebrate tomorrow. I'll take you to Joey's for lunch. Emery forced a sad smile.
That sounds good.
Her eyes dropped to my feet.
No shoes?
I just ran down quick.
You're working late and forgot something?
No, I, have company.
Oh.
Her face, which was already sad, looked like I just told her a puppy had died. This time she couldn't even force a smile.
Don't let me keep you. I'll be out of here shortly anyway.
I said goodnight, but felt like complete shit walking away. Why did I feel like 200 pounds of added weight was sitting on my shoulders as I rode the elevator back upstairs? It wasn't me who had screwed her over. I hadn't even known it was her birthday. I walked back into my apartment, completely lost in thought, only to be greeted by Emily. She was standing in the doorway that led to my living room, wearing nothing but those sexy-as-shit skinny-heeled shoes and her black lace G-string. Nothing like a pair of perky D-cups to cheer you up when you're feeling down. She tilted her head and crossed her legs at the ankles. The shoes were definitely staying on. I could almost feel them digging into my back already.
Like what you see?
I responded without words, stalking over and lifting her up, guiding her legs to wrap around my waist. You can ride me later. Right now I'm going to fuck you on my kitchen table. You okay with that, Emery? She chuckled.
Emily,
I think all the blood is rushing south and messing with your ability to speak.
Fuck. I'd called her Emery and hadn't even